Back together again, you and I, wrapping up the month of June, starting a new week, Monday, June 30th, 2025, on Connecticut Today. I opened the show wondering why New York City mayoral candidate Zohran Mamdani and other progressives constantly bash and lash out at billionaires. State Senate Republican leader Steve Harding dropped by to talk about the reappointment of Marissa Gillette by Governor Ned Lamont to head the state's Public Utilities Regulatory Authority, and Landmark Legal Foundation VP of Legal Affairs Mike O'Neill stopped by to chat about the key decisions handed down last week by the U.S. Supreme Court.
So watching some stuff, reading some stuff over the weekend, just kind of kicking back, working my second job, seeing what's going on all throughout the world. You know, a question popped in my mind, and I'll tell you why I got that question. What's causing me to ask it today, because I did see a few things over the weekend that actually made me wonder this. You ever notice, and again, this is because right now this story, which is just a few miles down away from us, down the Parkway or down 95 or down Long Island Sound, you have this gentleman, Mr. Mamdani, this Democratic socialist who says, he has a vision for New York, wants to do rent control and all this. But one thing he talked about this weekend, and I have the audio for you coming up momentarily, he appeared on NBC's Meet the Press with Kristen Welker, because again, this isn't just not a New York story. This has become a national story and a world story that will have some sort of reverberations up here into Connecticut, especially for the thousands of folks that commute into and out of the Big Apple, New York City, on a semi-regular basis or even on a regular basis every day. I have friends of mine who come in from the New Haven area, Hartford area, and they love their jobs and they love what they do, and it pays enough to where they feel that it's okay for them to commute into and out of New York. I didn't do it every day for a point, but, you know, pre-COVID, I was doing it, you know, 2-3 days a week, and there were times where I felt completely safe in the city, and there were other times that I was looking over my shoulder every 5 or 10 minutes, especially when Mr. de Blasio took over and he, let's say, did not have the emphasis on certain quality of life things that Mr. Bloomberg and Mr. Giuliani had years ago. So I hear this, and this is going to be the first part of the show today. This quick clip runs about 25 seconds. Now, I got to say this. His Zohran Mamdani guy, this guy's good. He is slick. He's got the act down. But listen to this. It's less than 30 seconds, but I have a question after this. Right? Here we go.
You are a self-described Democratic socialist. Do you think that billionaires have a right to exist?
I don't think that we should have billionaires because, frankly, it is so much money in a moment of such inequality. And ultimately, what we need more of is equality across our city and across our state and across our country. And I look forward to work with everyone, including billionaires, to make a city that is fairer for all of them.
Oh, is he slick? Oh, is he slippery? He looks great. He's very erudite. His elocution is great. But you know, I saw this on Sunday, and I'm sitting there watching, and I listened to it a couple times over. I have the clip here you just heard. What is it with the left? And I really have never understood this. They see the word billionaire, and it's like kryptonite for them. It's like when Superman was exposed to kryptonite, he'd start to fall weak. You know, George Reeves, God rest his soul, he would fall to his knees and start retching. Why is it just a billionaire? Like, if somebody's a billionaire, they're bad. But if they're, I don't know, well, what's the cutoff line here? Where's the bad, good line? If you can draw one, is 100 million okay, but 101 million is bad? Is 200 million okay, but $205,683,742.18 is bad? I don't get it. What is the infatuation with the left and with guys like Mamdani, and frankly, a lot of Democrats, many in this state, who recoil at billionaires? Well, it's a lot of money. Hell yes, it's a lot of money. Usually, if somebody becomes a billionaire, they didn't steal it. They didn't go into a bank with a gun and a ski mask on and said, give me a billion dollars. Sir, I can't hear you. Sir, can you take the mask off? Give me $1 billion. Doesn't work that way. The people who attain that sort of wealth in society, I don't know, people like Elon Musk, people like Jeff Bezos, whatever, they generally come up with Larry Ellison, Bill Gates. They tend to come up with something that's, I don't know, a really good idea or a really revolutionary way of doing something old since the beginning of time that a whole hell of a lot of people like. Jeff Bezos didn't reinvent the wheel, for God's sake. He said, well, let me make shopping easier. Guy started selling books out of a garage, for God's sake. But you got guys like Mom Dottie, and I'm sure there are some leftists here in the state who they recoil at $1 billion. So somebody has $1 billion. Who cares? Now, you can debate whether or not they should be as active in politics and their donations. All right, that's always open for debate. And I'm perfectly fine to have that discussion with you. But what is this infatuation from the left and from guys like Mamdani with billionaires? And you get it from Bernie Sanders, too. The billionaires! The billionaires! I mean, get off it, you people. Or maybe I have it wrong. I don't know. I just don't tend to bitch and moan about people, how they got their money. It's none of my business. Well, they're avoiding the taxes. Well, Bernie, change the tax code. What do you want me to do about it? Why are you always so angry? Why are these people so angry? See, this is one of Mom Dondi's strengths. He doesn't come over as angry. I have a clip of him a little bit later on where he was confronted by Kristen Welker regarding the Intifada thing. Wait till you hear this. I listened to that, and after 2.5 minutes, I was wiping the lubricant off me, saying, this guy is slick. But let's start with this. The Democratic Socialist mayoral candidate in New York, I put this on the Facebook page today, he said, I don't think we should have billionaires. Does that frighten you? It frightens the hell out of me. Now, he obviously is not going to be able to do anything to prevent that. But where does that thinking come from? And why are people so wrapped up in how much somebody else makes? It's not like there's only a set amount of money. And if the billionaires scoff it all up, take an extra scoop from the buffet table, there's not enough money left. Explain this to me, please. 203-333-9422-333-WICC. He said, quote, I don't think that we should have billionaires. Do you agree with that or not? Why or perhaps why not?
You are a self-described democratic socialist. Do you think that billionaires have a right to exist?
I don't think that we should have billionaires because, frankly, it is so much money in a moment of such inequality. And ultimately, what we need more of is equality across our city and across our state and across our country. And I look forward to work with everyone, including billionaires, to make a city that is fairer for all of them.
Says the guy who wants to become the mayor of a city that was basically built by billionaires to some extent. I know New York is essentially a blue-collar city. Different than L.A., different than Chicago, but really? So he says we shouldn't have billionaires. All right, so does that mean Paul McCartney shouldn't exist? He's worth about $1 billion. Does that mean LeBron James shouldn't exist? I read the other day his net worth is near $1 billion. Does that mean Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson shouldn't exist? They're pretty much billionaires. Magic Johnson, a very shrewd investor and entrepreneur. Mr. Jordan, of course, the Air Jordan Empire with him. They made a movie about it last year, the year before. So is this just crap to fire up his leftist base? But again, he won. See, he's very slick. He's not dumb, this guy. This is what all socialists do. You can't pay your bills, so it's somebody else's fault. Okay. Now, maybe it is. But does that mean you have to say equality? Notice the equality, everybody a chance. No, you can't. Equality is not happening. The world is not an equal place. No successful economic plan is equality. It isn't. Tony in Huntington kicks us off today. Tony, good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, Paul. I'm doing fine. And you?
I'm good, Tony. What's on your mind?
But I understand where the Mandani, when it comes to billionaires, millionaires, but what? You know, so what? He expressed his feeling, and whether people like it or not. And to be honest with you, you know, I would rather have someone like him in the office and then have someone like Donald Trump in the Oval Office, who has been convicted of 32 felony, who is one of the biggest liars in this planet. So that's my personal opinion. So I would have this guy. I would endorse this guy. I don't live in New York, but I would endorse him in a heartbeat. So that's my own personal opinion. And keep the good work, Paul. You have a great show, and I have a lot of respect for you, and keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you, Tony. Appreciate it. Always good to hear from you. Thank you, Tony. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. I just find it funny. And this is a lot. Now, you're right. I don't live in New York either. Now, my son does, and I am concerned about my son's safety. And Mom Donnie's already talking about what. Now, 4 years ago, in a tweet, he said the NYPD were racist, anti-gay, anti-LGBTQ. Okay, well, now he's saying he's moved on from that. He has different thinking. And by the way, the NYPD, by the way, now has a very, very, very good commissioner in Jessica Tisch. She's not sure whether she would stick around here. But not so much that. Public safety is one thing, but this whole thing, and I watched this clip with Kristen Welker on Meet the Press over the weekend and Mr. Mamdani, and it's not just this. I mean, it's with the Jeff Bezos wedding, a billionaire wedding. Who cares? Well, he spends $60 million on his wedding. Okay, does that not mean somebody got paid $60 million? I mean, well, you know, he spent all this money. So what did he do, burn the money? No, somebody with a whole lot of money gave somebody else a whole lot of money. And I think that thinking, part of the reason I bring this up, it's dangerous thinking. It really is. Now, the Democratic Party never used to be that way. Now it is. Jealousy is a very dangerous thing. It really is. But generally, somebody becomes a billionaire because they're really good at something and they came up with an idea. Hey, I'm going to do this better. Carlos Slim, Larry Ellison, Bill Gates, Michael Bloomberg, a couple of mayors ago in New York. He was a hell of a good mayor. 3 terms. Did anybody care he was a billionaire? Bill in Shelton is with us. Hello, Bill. How are you?
Hello?
Hello, Bill. You're on the air, buddy.
Oh, okay. You know, first of all, what Tony said about Donald Trump, I'm not too crazy about. I mean, one of the big heroes of the Democratic Party, LBJ, was responsible for, like, several murders, but I won't go into that.
All right, yeah,
anyway,
we don't want it, yeah.
This whole thing with people hating billionaires, it's the same mentality of everybody gets a trophy.
Yeah,
you
participation
trophy, even though you stink. You know what I mean?
Hey, Bill, I don't know about you, but billionaires tend to hire people. Maybe that's crazy thinking of mine. I don't know. You tell me.
If we didn't have billionaires in our system here and multimillionaires, the whole country would go into the toilet. I spent most of my life in sales and marketing, yeah, selling to people who have money, companies who have money, families who own corporations who have money. If it wasn't for them, you know, I wouldn't be comfortably retired right now.
Good for you.
So, you know, you need billionaires.
Yeah.
You can't get rid of them.
Bill, thank you. Appreciate it. Yeah, and part of the reason this bothers me, and I brought it up, is I think billionaires are being scapegoated. Look at Warren Buffett. Oh, everybody loves Buffett. This man got a 90. He's giving away another $6 billion. Good for him. So wait a minute. If he wasn't a billionaire, the charities that he just gave all that stock to, I guess they wouldn't be benefiting in this? I don't know. The sun rises in the east and sets in the west. The Pope does, a bear, his business or her business in the woods. The Pope is Catholic. Water is wet. And we still have more controversy about PURA, the Public Utility Regulatory Authority. And joining us right now, Republican State Senate Leader Steve Harding, to talk about something that moderately surprised me, that didn't, despite all the funky business allegedly going on with PURA. Governor Ned Lamont says he wants to see Marissa Gillette, with all due respect to her. The investigations continue. See her run PURA for a few more years. Steve Harding is with us. Steve, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good evening, or good afternoon, I should say, Paul. And thank you for having me. And yeah, unfortunately, like all those adages that you just listed, it's the same. It seems like it's Groundhog Day all over again. And frankly, it's for a good reason. It's not that this is something that is unwarranted in terms of, you know, my criticism, my Senate Republican colleagues' criticism, my House Republican colleagues' criticisms. Of this chairwoman. I mean, and it all stems back to the fact that we have the second highest electric rates in the country. She has been the PURA chair for the past 5 years. And, you know, I had an objection just inherently in the fact that how could you, as legislators or the governor or any government official for that matter, with electric rates currently where they stand in this state, as families continue to suffer, how could you possibly reaffirm that where we've gone over the last 5 years is even remotely acceptable? And by virtue of the fact that we've now reconfirmed with the legislature, the governor came out today and, you know, reappointed her as chair, despite, you know, some of these other very troubling allegations, we still stand at the same exact place with our electric ratepayers, our hardworking residents struggling to pay their skyrocketing bills.
Yeah, Steve, the bills aside for a minute, yes, that's a major issue here. But just the other stuff, Steve Harding here, again, three words, Steve, I don't know about you. You never want to see ascribed to anybody deleted text messages. We have that. We have the allegations about getting together to write certain op-eds. We have allegations as to whether she was alone in making some decisions, who signed off on these decisions. They tried to make it go away. A judge said, no, we're not going to make this go away. I mean, Steve, listen, those are all important things that I would think the governor or his staff may say, hey, you know what, it's just to maybe, with all due respect, innocent until proven guilty, maybe a fresh face would have been a better idea. Look, Steve, I don't know, but all these other ancillary things have me scratching my head here.
Right. And well, I think, Paul, you hit the nail on the head. I think that, you know, how you need to look at it is what private business, what private entity, what private individual or resident in the state would look at what has gone on during Chairwoman Gillette's tenure, the allegations that have occurred, frankly, the allegations that have occurred for multiple officials that are overseen and reappointed by Governor Lamont. Mm-hmm. And in what world would they find any of these actions acceptable? And it doesn't matter if you're if you're a business in Southington, if a resident in Thompson, if you're in my district and a resident in Goshen somewhere, in any business with any residential household, where would you ever find any of this behavior acceptable, where you're deleting text messages that involve substance, which are all FOIable material, whether you're making decisions unilaterally and maybe not being fully transparent about that and following and abiding by the regulations that you're evidently setting, whether you're the governor's office and you have had multiple officials that really have been indicted federally for actions in which you haven't even really made much statement about or even had any administrative action on your part to correct any of these things. Look at the Chancellor Chang issue, where he was the chancellor of the university system, where he was expending $20,000+ a year on alcohol and travel and expensive restaurants, all on the taxpayer dime. I mean, where is the level of accountability? And that's, you know, we are so highly taxed in the state We have the highest electric rates, the second highest electric rates in the country. At the least, what I'm saying to Governor Lamont, what I'm saying to Chairwoman Gillette, at the least, can we be honest and fair with our taxpayers and our residents? I mean, at the very least, if they can't get affordable taxes like we've been fighting for in the Republican caucus, if they can't get affordable electric rates like we've been fighting for in the Republican Party in the state, at least let them be provided transparency and good government. And we can't even do that under this governor's leadership.
Yeah,
I think that is the issue.
And Steve, to my end here, having a journalism background here, when I'm reading about, you know, funny business going on with who got together to write op-eds and floating op-eds in front of people, I mean, to me, Steve, above and beyond the nuts and bolts and the dollars and cents here, even at the allegation stage, that's kind of a little greasy. You know what I mean? It just doesn't. I understand they're trying to sway public opinion, but you sway public opinion, I think, Steve, with good policy, not trying to turn the screws on some op-eds here or who's saying good things and who's saying bad things. I mean, we do have freedom of speech, don't we?
Well, exactly right. And the thing is that you're held to a different standard. And I think that's what it comes down to. I think Representative Candelora, the House Republican leader, has highlighted this very well and articulately. Chairwoman Gillette has their role as an adjudicator and is supposed to adjudicate against the utility companies. The utility companies are certainly no angel in all this. There's a lot of things they've done sure. I disagree with. They need to be held accountable. But when it comes down to it is if you as Chairwoman or PURA have a job to regulate them and regulate them fairly. And when you're writing text messages and then deleting the text message so the public can't see to influence legislators to write op-eds against the individuals that you're going to be regulating, there's something inherently wrong about
yeah.
that. And I think that's what it comes down to when it comes down to being transparent and honest and holding yourself to a higher standard. And unfortunately, what we've seen from this chairwoman, I think most importantly, as I mentioned before, what we've seen from Governor Lamont, where no government official seemingly is held accountable for their actions or inactions for that matter in being held accountable to the taxpayers of the state, where everyone is simply their jobs remain, they're reappointed, they're given cushy side jobs like Chancellor Chang, where they're making the same amount of money they were under as chancellor. It's just it's once again in a long line of individuals within the confines of our state government under the auspices of Governor Lamont in a case where he just will not stand up to them and stand up for the taxpayer and say, no, you're not holding up your end of the bargain to the taxpayer. You're not being transparent. You're doing things in back room type of ways. And where, at what point is someone going to step up or in the governor's office and say, no, this is wrong. We're not going to continue your term. You're not doing the job we've hired you to do for the taxpayer.
Yeah, I mean, Stephen, finally here, no offense to Ms. Gillette or whatever. I have, you know, that's way above my pay grade what she does. But you know what, Steve? Nobody's indispensable. I'm sure there are other great minds. We have all these colleges, professionals, universities in this state. It drives me nuts that we just get into these habits, stay with the same people over and over and over and over again, and not even extend the tent here and say, hey, come on up. What could you do for us? I mean, it's not like we're in the middle of a desert of minds here in Connecticut.
Well, Paul, what's the definition of insanity?
Yeah, doing the same thing over and over again
yeah. and expecting different results.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, that's unfortunate. Our government needs to have different results for the taxpayers, for the ratepayers. And instead, what we see from this governor and the democratically controlled legislature is let's do the same thing over and over and over and over again and somehow close our eyes and hope that when we open it, it's a different result. It's insanity to think that. And so that's exactly what's being done here with our electric rates and under the leadership of PURA, and it's very unfortunate.
Yeah, Steve Harding. Steve, thank you, man. Drive safely, and we'll talk down the road. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, there you go. And a few minutes now before we go back to open phones with one of our legal eagles, Landmark Legal Foundation, VP of Legal Affairs, Mike O'Neill, joining us to talk about, I guess something that came out today and also some big cases last week. Hey, Mike, it's Paul here again. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good to be with you, Paul. How are you? I'm
good,
doing well.
Good, good. Before we get to what happened last week, did I see the court is going to take what looks like to be another really important case here?
Yes. Yeah. Campaign finance regulations. Here we go. We're going to already on the docket for next term. They're going to consider limits on coordinated campaign expenditures. So they're going to address campaign finance funding. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Next term, it looks like it's going to be a big case along the lines of the Citizens United. I mean, we're going to have a major campaign finance case coming up in the next term. We'll see what happens with it.
So what, Mike, quickly is the genesis of this case? You talk about limits to campaign fundraising coordinated. Where did this case come from?
Yeah, this comes from the National Republican Congressional Committee and Senator, and actually Vice President, but then Senator J.D. Vance. And so I think the case might be termed Vance. So I think that might be the title of the case, Vance. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but it came from the Republican Congressional Committee, Senator Vance, Representative Steve Chabo.
Yeah.
And they contend that the law limiting contributions to soft money contributions violates the First Amendment. So we're going to see a decision on this. Coming down again, this is going to be argued and briefed next term. Again, the case is called National Republican Senatorial Committee versus FEC. Excuse me, Vance is not named in the caption for the case, but NRSC versus FEC. So a lot of letters there for you.
All right, and now let's go back and give us your breakdown, Mike, of this case that I thought of you when I saw this decision come down, because you and I have always railed against the ability of a single judge, and both sides do it. You go judge shopping to get one judge, maybe not even near the jurisdiction where something is happening, to stop something here. So this doesn't mean these cases are going away, but it just limits what a single judge can do, correct?
Right. This is the case of Trump versus CASA, and this is the birthright citizenship. You know, let's set aside. Everybody talks about birthright citizenship.
Yeah.
Set aside that. That specific issue was not decided. That's the merits case that will percolate up to the Supreme Court probably either next term or soon at some point. But essentially what this case was deciding was the court's power to issue a district court, not the Supreme Court, a lone district court, about 675 of these judges in the country, issuing a universal injunction, an order that applies throughout the entire country, not just limited to the litigants in front of the court. And the court resoundingly, in a 6-3 decision authored by Amy Coney Barrett, issued a decision stating that lone federal district court judges do not have the equitable power to issue universal injunctions. In other words, they can only bind the parties that are before it. And so you saw a very well-reasoned decision by ACB. A lot of times conservatives, you know, I'd like to drag her through the mud, so to speak. When she issues bad decisions, let's give credit where credit is due. She issued a resounding, strong opinion looking at traditional equitable remedies that courts have, that district courts have, and concluded, of course, that a lone district court judge was never envisioned or empowered by our founding or our framers or the Judiciary Act with this kind of immense power. And she delved into some of the history of equitable remedies. Mm-hmm. She concluded, rightfully so, that this is a relatively new phenomenon. Up until the 1960s, it never existed. And then really, even the 1960s, 70s, 80s, and even into the 1990s, they were very rare.
Yeah.
It's only recently with Biden, Obama, and Trump that you've seen this purview of universal injunctions that have been issued. So courts have struck, the Supreme Court resoundingly struck a note saying, look, this is limiting the power of judges to issue universal injunctions, and saying to judges, essentially in so many words, hey, judges, you got to stay in your lane. You got to stay in your Article III authority lane.
Did I also see, and I laughed when somebody, Mike, put this up on social media, did I see Amy Coney Barrett take a pretty not so veiled shot at Ketanji Brown Jackson there?
Oh,
wow.
Absolutely. That was about as strong as language as you can get into it. And essentially there's a fundamental disagreement between the conservatives, quote unquote conservatives view of the judiciary, and then the quote unquote liberals view of the judiciary. And it's really the supremacy and the power of a single judge.
Sure.
Judge Jackson really wants to see a single power, a judge being able to stand athwart the executive branch and stop the implementation of whatever policy procedure that the executive branch is doing. And then Amy Coney Barrett and the conservative justices simply say, hey, look, there are limits to a single lone judge's authority here, and you can't subvert or hijack the Democrat process because you happen to disagree with the policy process.
Well, you can't have 600 kings. You can't have 600 kings
exactly.
thwarting
exactly.
the will of the people.
Exactly. And that's really the fundamental disagreement. That's the fundamental argument here, the disagreement. And so we know, as I've said before many times, is we know that a lot of these judges are forum shopped. And this will discourage us, as you talked about a few minutes ago, Paul, that you shouldn't be able to seek out a judge who you know disagrees with the policy that the executive order was implementing or attempting to implement, or even not even necessarily implementing, maybe just laying out a position of the administration. You saw a lot of these injunctions in some of these cases. It wasn't even an actual action. It was more of, hey, this is how we're going to interpret a pertinent law, and we're going to get an injunction. And that goes well beyond the scope of a simple Article III lone district court judge. And again, as you said, discourage forum shopping. If you want to challenge this, again, a lot of these things is elections have consequences, and a lot of these decisions are political decisions left to the legislatures and the political branches rather than the judiciary.
Yeah, and finally, Mike, we already hear, no surprise, in deep blue Connecticut, we have state leaders lamenting the other case here, where I guess the court said that parents now nationally must be given what, opt-outs in certain situations,
right,
if a school lesson is going to violate their religion.
Right. And it was interesting. And you saw some people on the left were lamenting the fact that this case even got up to the Supreme Court. This was a really bad fax for the liberals. Let's put it this way.
Yeah.
This is a county outside Washington, D.C., Montgomery County, who is imposing a transgender books. Imposing it on grade school and integrating it on grade school children and integrating it into the curriculum with no opt out.
Oh.
So it wasn't just books on a shelf in a library.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even just books that were integrated into a curriculum. It was books integrated into a curriculum obligated for these children to read with no opt out. In other words, the parents weren't informed and they weren't given the opportunity to say, hey, look, parents, we're going to be reading these books in our curriculum in the coming weeks. If you don't want your child to be participating, please opt out. That's a simple – but so no, you know, in their arrogance, the left, Montgomery County had pushed this. And this case got all the way – you know, got up to the Supreme Court, and hey, they were – this was not a good case for the left to bring up to the Supreme Court. I kind of looked at it as – and now you have – now I agree with the finding, and I think it's a great decision. But if you're looking at it from the prism or the perspective of somebody on the left, now they're like, oh, no, as you indicated, Paul – oh, no, now we have to contend with this decision now, and all courts are going to have to be aware of it. So kind of work to get this. Be careful what you wish for on the left, because sometimes you get it, and sometimes you're going to get struck down by the highest court in the land, and you're going to be left with a decision that's really going to, you know, is going to maybe kneecap whatever agenda you want to impose on our children, which is good for us, bad for them.
Absolutely. Mike O'Neill, Landmark Legal Foundation. As always, Mike, thank you. We'll chat down the road. Be good.
Yeah, take care, Paul.
Thanks, bye-bye. Mike. Appreciate it. Mike O'Neill.